Let the tax hikes begin.
Starting with the state of Illinois.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, January 12th. Coming up, a successful bond auction in Portugal today, but analysts say the country may yet need a bailout. And McDonald's runs into some trouble in Vermont.
But first, while you were sleeping, state legislators in the land of Lincoln were passing a 66% income tax increase.
Democrats in the state wanted to get it done before Republicans take control there. Illinois faces a $15 billion hole in its state budget. Corporate taxes will also go up.
Let's go now to the Illinois State Capitol, where Amanda Vinicky is standing by. She's State House Bureau Chief for WUIS, Illinois Public Media. Well, Amanda, bring us up to date on what happened in the wee hours of the morning and what it means for the people of Illinois.
Well, the tax increase package that passed basically means that if you're making $40,000 a year, you're going to owe the state another $800. Democrats say they had no choice. There was no way to cut out of such a dismal budget situation. The state's racked up approximately $15 billion deficit. Even the governor's budget director warns that the state's in jeopardy of getting its bond rating downgraded to junk status. You can hear the emotion in Democratic Representative David Miller's voice when he talked about the politics behind taking such a tough vote.
Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. It is time for us to live up to our responsibility to make sure people in the state of Illinois are taken care of.
Wow, very emotional stuff there in Illinois. Amanda, stand by. Let's bring in our Washington Bureau Chief, John Dimsdale. John, this is far from an Illinois-specific problem. States all across the country are facing big budget shortfalls and trying to figure out their way out of them.
That's right. One think tank estimates that states together face a $140 billion budget shortfall this year.
Wow.
California, for example, is looking at $25 billion in red ink. Texas and New Jersey both have to find $10 billion to balance their budgets. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has shown that he's willing to take on the state employee unions there and cut salaries and pension benefits.
And John, is there anything Washington can or will do to help states?
Well, that 2009 stimulus package, which had a lot of help for states, is running out. And given how bad federal finances are, Congress says, you know, there's just no more. For one thing, federal help benefits states that have been big spenders and punishes those states that have taken the fiscally responsible route.
Yep.
So states and even cities facing bankruptcy are on their own. That response from here is going to be similar to when New York City went to President Gerald Ford in 1975 with their hat in hand. And the Daily News headline was, Ford to City, drop dead.
Yeah, a lot of people remember that. Let's get back to Amanda Vinicky quickly in Springfield, Illinois. Amanda, what happens next there?
Well, first of all, the governor, Pat Quinn, has to sign the package into law, which he is expected to do. But then Republicans say they're going to immediately begin working to repeal the hike. Hmm. Even the people who support it say Illinois isn't out of the woods. Business community is very riled up. The tax package increases the corporate tax rate on them, leading one Republican senator to offer this investment tip, put money into moving vans.
Indeed. Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, no state has taken the ridicule and the criticism for its budget fiasco as much as California. Columnist Brett Ahrens from The Wall Street Journal says that's unfair and the ribbing of the Golden State should stop. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning.
So you say California isn't quite this pariah that a lot of people make it out to be, calling predictions of its default as hogwash. What's your reasoning?
This is a myth that has gone around and has been repeated so many times now that everyone just believes it. It's like the emperor's new clothes. But the reality is California's economy remains very successful.
Give us an example of your idea of success.
Per capita, real economic growth. You look at how much an economy has grown per person in real terms. And over the last 10 years, California has grown about 15%. The average for the U.S. is less than 9%. California has grown faster than most other states in the union.
So it's growing at a faster pace. But you can't hide, Brett, the fact that the state has this daunting budget deficit. I mean, some are saying as much as $25 billion. I mean, how do you account for that?
It does have a big budget deficit. No question there are problems. I mean, no one's suggesting it's fine. My problem is with people who think that it's somehow a basket case. And you know, that they're sort of doomed.
By doomed, you mean bailouts. There have been rumblings of a California bailout, right, since the housing market collapsed here and everywhere else. But in your column, you say it's just the opposite. How has California bailed out the rest of the country?
What happens in America is that essentially the high-income, high-productivity, and high-cost states pay much higher federal taxes than they get back in federal spending. California has probably transferred about $600 billion to the rest of America in the last quarter century. America has been an enormous beneficiary of the Californian economy. You know, if you want to use a European analogy, they are Germany, they are not Greece. They have been pouring money into the system. The idea that somehow this state is on welfare, that the rest of us are, quote, propping it up, is nonsense.
Brett Ahrens, columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Brett, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, let's remember this fiscal nightmare in Illinois and in California and states across the country began when the housing market went bust. This morning, the Mortgage Bankers Association said mortgage applications inched up last week, but according to the latest numbers, home prices are still falling. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now on whether we're in for a double dip in the housing market.
Home prices were down more than 5% in November compared to the previous year, according to research firm CoreLogic. That's the fourth monthly decline. A tax credit for first-time home buyers helped jumpstart sales and push prices up last year, but only temporarily, says Sam Cotter of CoreLogic.
It will be a number of years before the market recovers.
Most analysts expect home prices to fall at least 5% more, dipping below the lows already hit in the recession.
And that's primarily because there's a large supply-demand imbalance, way too many homes on the market, in addition, a large pipeline of defaults.
And all those cut-rate foreclosures are dragging down home prices for everyone, says David Blitzer of Standard & Poor's.
Not only are there a lot of them pending, but every time we think we've worked through the last legal issue or signature issue for foreclosures, there's another one.
Some banks stopped foreclosures temporarily because of those legal issues, but home seizures are likely to pick up again this year. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Jeremy, Pamela Ivey can thank a Kentucky convenience store cashier for helping her take home a little more cash. Jeremy, Ivey won part of the Mega Millions lottery game there in Kentucky. But when she bought the ticket, the store clerk accidentally added the multiplier feature, which doubled the cost of the ticket from $5 to $10, but it quadrupled the size of her winnings.
Oh, wow.
From $250,000 to $1 million.
Lucky woman.
Yeah. Minus taxes, of course. The clerk can't, unfortunately, do anything about that. You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 12th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, where do you go, Steve?
The numbers at marketplace.org.
That's right. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? There's more news from Europe on the debt crisis there. Today, the news is good, a successful auction of debt in Portugal. Let's get to the big picture from Richard DeKayser, an economist with the Parthenon Group. He's with us from London this morning. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So bring us up to date on this news from Portugal and why it matters.
Well, the government brought to market $1.6 billion in debt, and it was all snapped up, and it was snapped up at interest rates which were not as high as people feared they might have been. Now, why this matters is that Like Greece and Ireland before it, Portugal has been the latest focus of investors who are pessimistic that it can make good on its debts going forward. And as a result, they have been unwilling to buy their debt in large volumes. So the question here was, will they pony up and actually buy the necessary debt to show that there's confidence and keep Portugal out of the bailout category?
And Richard, I feel like I have whiplash here with this European debt crisis.
Right.
Every day there's one step forward, one step back. What do you think is going to happen with this going forward? And does the debt crisis there still have the ability to draw us back into a recession?
It does have the ability to, but I don't think it's likely. And the reason, Jeremy, is the real risk here is default. Believe it or not, no country has yet to default on its debt, neither Ireland nor Greece before it. And the reason is that the bailouts have been there. And number one, the government of the governments of China and Japan have expressed a desire to buy this debt. The European government's ponying up hundreds of billions to do it, and the countries themselves are taking all the tough fiscal steps to prevent those problems from coming to a head.
All right, Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
In Australia, nearly two dozen people have died and hundreds of thousands have been left homeless after the worst flooding that country has seen in decades. And the economy in Australia is also taking a big hit. Now, picture the size of Texas and then add another half of Texas, and you'll get an idea of how much of Australia is underwater. Reporter Stuart Cohen is with us from Sydney with the latest. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Steve.
I want to talk about this, the latest effect on the national economy there. What's going on?
Just a week ago, the estimates were that the total costs, both in terms of cleanup and the loss of income from some of the biggest industries in the country, were going to be around $5 billion, and that's roughly about 0.5% of the entire GDP of Australia. Now that number has been tossed out, and they're talking about the costs more like an entire single 1% of the GDP, which is pretty big for just one natural disaster. The projections now are that this is going to cost more than the devastation of Hurricane Katrina did in the U.S.
And what about the cost beyond Australia's borders?
The biggest effect worldwide is likely to be from the Australian coal mining industry. Australia is the world's biggest supplier of coking coal, which is used in the making of steel. There are projections that the floods could remove over 5% of the coking coal from world markets this year, and analysts are saying that could raise prices by a third or more. And Queensland itself is also a big exporter of sugar, cotton, and wheat. So in our big globalized economy, you remove one major producer like that, and it's going to have an effect on prices of dozens of food products, manufactured goods, you name it.
Reporter Stuart Cohen in Sydney. Stuart, thank you.
Steve, you're welcome.
The European plane maker Airbus has just pulled off what it calls the biggest sale in the history of commercial aviation. The company has sold around $15 billion worth of aircraft to a budget airline in India. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports the deal is going to put a lot of pressure on Airbus's biggest rival, Boeing.
Airbus says its firm order includes 150 of its new A320neo jets. This is not a completely new plane. It's an upgraded version of the popular single-aisle aircraft. Airbus's decision to revamp the plane with a more fuel-efficient engine was controversial. Boeing dismissed the move. The US company said most airlines would prefer to wait for an all-new model. The deal announced today vindicates Airbus, says Laurie Price, aviation expert with consulting firm Mott MacDonald.
The key thing is that in a time of escalating fuel price, Airbus are offering airlines looking at re-equipment with an option that will give substantial fuel savings.
Boeing had indicated it would not carry out a similar revamp on its best-selling single-aisle plane, the 737. In the light of today's deal by Airbus, Boeing may now change its mind. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said this morning that China's currency, the yuan, remains substantially undervalued. Now, his comments come as President Obama prepares to welcome China's President Hu Jintao to Washington next week.
But today, Steve, the U.S. got a visit from the yuan itself. For the first time, China's largest state bank is allowing its customers to trade its currency here in the United States. And it has some people talking about the yuan becoming a global currency. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
Comments on American news sites that broke the news of the UN's arrival to the U.S. reeked of conspiracy. Many agreed that China's currency, also known as the renminbi, would soon replace the U.S. dollar as the world's de facto reserve currency. Beijing economist Arthur Krober wasn't one of them.
The renminbi has a long, long, long way to go before it even becomes a significant international currency.
According to the latest international figures on foreign exchange trading, about 80% of all foreign exchange transactions in the world use the dollar. The figure for the renminbi, 0.3%. In order to become a reserve currency, you'd need a transparent government bond market. China's government bond market is mostly closed to foreigners, and there are literally days in which no government bonds change hands. The average daily volume in the U.S. Treasury market is $600 billion. Still, if you're interested in opening a renminbi account, the Bank of China's three offices in New York and Los Angeles are ready to take your money. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, the 12th day of January. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org.
Walmart has tried for nearly 10 years to open stores in the nation's largest market, New York City. But fierce opposition from lawmakers and from unions has kept the world's biggest retailer out. So now Walmart has taken its message directly online to New York City residents. Reporter Janet Babin has more.
Walmart's new website says most New Yorkers it surveyed want to shop at a local Walmart. New York City Council has scheduled a hearing about the chain. Walmart was invited, but in a letter, it said it won't be coming. Council Speaker Christine Quinn says the retailer turned council down because it hasn't announced any plans to open in New York City. She calls the move disingenuous.
They say, why is the council having a hearing? We're not looking at any stores. But just this week, they launched a website to try to convince New Yorkers that Walmart would be good for them.
Walmart declined comment beyond its letter, which says its stores in other big cities are magnets for growth and business development. Faith Hope Consolo with real estate firm Prudential Douglas Elliman says landlords and real estate agents can't wait for Walmart's arrival.
They bring a strong signature. They bring a lot of advertising dollars, so they can fill a lot of holes.
With Target, Home Depot, and other big chains already open in the city, Consolo says it's getting harder to keep Walmart out. In New York, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Well, it's not that surprising that electronic book sales are up. Amazon reported record sales of its Kindle e-reader over the holidays. But Steve, you know what is surprising?
What's that?
Hardcover book sales are also up. Mm. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
According to the report by Britain's Institution of Mechanical Engineers, world population growth is the defining challenge of the century, bigger even than climate change. Currently, there are 6.9 billion people in the world, and that number is expected to jump to more than 9 billion by 2075. The engineers say work needs to start now on developing technology that can cope with that growth. Dr. Tim Fox is lead author of the report and says many of the problems can already be solved, like keeping food fresh.
So something like 50% of food is wasted in newly developing countries between the field and the marketplace. In the highly industrialized countries, we've solved that problem sustainably through the use of refrigeration and transportation mechanisms that are highly optimized.
Another idea is to help developing countries keep their carbon emissions low. One suggestion being that Europe stop exporting old polluting diesel cars to Africa. But the report doesn't suggest how African taxi drivers will afford to buy new clean cars. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
And finally, McDonald's has a new product. It's called Fruit and Maple Oatmeal. You see any problems there, Steve?
I can think of maybe just one.
Just one, and its name is Vermont. They take their maple very seriously there, and the state says McDonald's is not using real maple, and so it's in violation of the state's maple laws. I didn't know that Vermont actually had maple laws, but they do, and they say that McDonald's is either going to have to change the name or the ingredients.
So, all right, where's the relief here? What's the solution, Jeremy? Do you have any suggestions here?
I do. I've got a suggestion. Here it is. You can call it McFruit and McMaple McOatmeal. Problem solved. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.